You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Stayed at that level of the relationship. My face hurt from smiling because I was, you know, that early thing, you know, when you first fall in love. And while we were still courting, before we were even married, quite frankly, if I had kept that kind of mindset and relationship with her, I'd have never been able to hold a job, right? I was so overwhelmed with my focus on her. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we should take our focus off the Lord. What I'm saying is that our relationship matures over time. Our love matures. Our love doesn't necessarily lessen. And one of the things I think that God does for us in the early days is he provides these miracles. He provides his presence in a very palatable way so that we know it's real, because we tend to question those kind of things, those quote-unquote experiences. But at the same time, he wants to know that our faith is strong as well. If we relied on feelings over faith, we'd be in trouble. And so as we mature, the need for those feelings regresses. That tide goes out, and what comes in is a strong knowledge and faith of him and his presence, his word, and his truth. And so how I feel is irrelevant to what I know to be true. So, you know, one of the things people, my standard greeting, sort of a way of evangelizing, if you will, is I'll ask people how you're doing, and inevitably they have to ask me back how I'm doing. And my answer is better than I deserve. And they'll respond with, oh, I'm sure you deserve it. I go, well, let me explain, you know, what he's done for me on the cross. And the trick to that is, no matter how my day is going, when I remember what he's done for me, I am always doing better than I deserve. On my worst day, I'm still doing better than I deserve because of what he's done for me. So how I feel that day is irrelevant to what I know to be true. And yeah, I think that's what happened.
It's funny. I've got an image of Christ later on in life that I've realized. He was a carpenter. Mm-hmm. And in those days and age, they didn't pick up a piece of plywood. They picked up logs, huge ones. And so he was probably a very, very muscular guy, a very manly man. It also took a man's man to be willing to die on the cross. I mean, I asked the people out there listening to this or viewing this that, you know, some man stood, a bad guy comes into a store and you're standing there and he stood in front of you and took the bullets for you, you know, or a friend saying, I, you know, this is how much I care about you. It's pretty amazing if you think about it in those terms. And so you keep that before you at all times, that he chose you, but he died for you 2,000 years ago, right, Lyle?
Correct. And so if I remember that, you know, and first of all, I call them the stones of remembrance, remembering the things he's done for me, those early feelings you had, that sense of his presence that you had, the changes he did in your heart and your mind and your life, those are, you know, stones of remembrance. We put up a monument in our heart and our mind for what he's done. Does he ever need to do anything else? No. Will he? Yes. But remembering that he has in the past gives us that hope that he will again in the future. And that's why I say I don't rely on feelings. And so, yes, there are times still during a moment of worship or prayer where I get that overwhelming sense of his presence, and you know, it can bring tears to your eyes, and it's just so fulfilling. But I don't need that to know he's still with me. I don't need that to know that he still cares for me, that he still loves me, that he's still guiding me and directing me.
Sure. You know? Now, you have a recovery church that meets on Monday nights in Port St. Lucie. What I want to know is, you went to a treatment center and that didn't work. What, if you think about one thing that puts you over the top, like I can say, I kept wanting to stop. Tomorrow night, I won't drink tomorrow night, but I couldn't stop till finally 2 o'clock one morning. They called it the moment of clarity, living by myself. I called out to God and said, I can't do this on my own. I surrender. I need your help. And once again, within days, I ended up in a 12-step program. What brought you to your final end, the bottom of your bottom of the barrel or whatever?
Okay, so my bottom. Well, I had gone to that treatment center and I had done all the things they told me to. I got a sponsor, and when I had that what they call burning desire, I called my sponsor and he said, I'm a little busy, we can meet later in the day. And that was all the license I needed to go off and, you know, hit the streets, if you will. And that's exactly what happened. I lost a beautiful home and moved into a condo and lost a condo and moved into a duplex in the hood and lost that and moved into what I called my mobile home, which means I was living in my car. And you'd think all of that would have been enough, but then someone stole my car. And so, and now I'm without even that. And I had been talking to God for a period of time and saying, you know, Lord, I can't do this and I need you to soon. And I wasn't ready to, quite frankly, give it up, I guess. And I kept saying soon, soon, soon. Well, when that happened, I found myself at a location and in a situation where I just said, this is insane. I mean, my life, I'm crazy, is what I concluded. And I dropped to my knees and I said, okay, Lord, I'm done now. I need you to do this. And that's exactly what he did. I walked around for rest of that night and into the next day. And I went to the house of a guy. He was a paraplegic that had gotten paralyzed when he got shot in the back during a drug deal. And I used to stay on his couch occasionally. And I went in there and the phone rang and it happened to be a police officer who was calling. I didn't even know the number there or that I was going to be there. So how they found me is miraculous. And so it's telling me that basically that they had found a place for me to go get treatment. It ended up being that faith-based center. And it took 2 weeks to actually get the bed. But once I did, I went in there and it was quite frankly horrible. They used what they call the old Phoenix model, which is to tear you down and build you back up, which statistically speaking creates more harm than good. But there was a
I've never heard of this.
Yeah. It's like the old boot camps and stuff. So, you know, in order to get in, you had to be interviewed by the other clients and yeah, they would tell you how worthless you were and you were worth nothing. You had to go out and cut the grass with a pair of scissors and count the blades. You'd dig a hole and fill it back in. They had a thing called sweeping the sun off the sidewalk. They had a field, and in the middle of the field was a patch of concrete. And if you got in trouble or whatever, didn't follow the rules exactly, you had to go out there and literally take a broom and, you know, they called it sweeping the sun off the sidewalk. You had to sweep the cement nonstop all day long. You got two bathroom breaks and a lunch break. And it was, quite frankly, torturous in a lot of ways. But the determination to do it and to stay close to the Lord, he kept me through it. The place has since changed their tactics, and they still exist, and they do a much better job today. They're now a licensed facility. They do, you know, actual treatment. But there was a lady there who was a pastor, and she and I dug into the Word together, and she shared her faith with me. And I did have 2 hours each night at the end of the day when we weren't doing chores, where I had time to dig into the scriptures, and I poured over the Word for those 2 hours. I ate it up, and it was a 9-month program. And at the end of the 9 months, they told me I'd graduated, and I didn't feel that I was ready. So I asked if I could stay on, and I did. I held positions there as a volunteer, and then as an employee, and then an administrator, and I was there for 3 years. And the one thing that was constant throughout it was my time in the scriptures. And it was while I was there that I met my wife, actually in a Bible study at church. And we dated, and the Lord told me 2 days in that she was the woman I was going to marry. He put that together, too, because I had been praying prior to that. I had 3 times of prayer set up throughout the day just as my chores gave me the break time. And part of that prayer was that, Lord, I want you to bring me the woman that you want for me, because my picker had been broken. I wasn't picking too good of a choice and mates prior to that, and I wanted him to pick her for me. And I told him the only requirements, the only thing I wanted of her was that she would love the Lord more than anything else. And I had been singing in a choir, and we went to a homeless center, and there was a night of worship there. And there was a woman up there doing a liturgical dance, and because the choir sang at the beginning and end. So I'm sitting down watching, and I said, Lord, I could just see her love for the Lord. I said, a woman like that, someone who loves you like that. That turned out to be my wife as I met her months later in the Bible study. And I told her, I didn't ask her. I told her 3 days in, I'm going to marry you. And it wasn't my plan. It just sort of came out, you know. And I did.
Did you scare her?
Pardon?
Did you scare her by saying that?
No, actually, what happened was we were having a, you know, we went out to a breakfast date, and it was happened to be Halloween. We didn't realize it was Halloween, but it happened to be Halloween morning. We went to a diner and had a breakfast date, and she says, "So tell me about yourself." And I did, and my history is fairly traumatic. It's a made for TV movie. When I was young, I was abducted, raped, left for dead in the Everglades, all kinds of really fun stuff. And she said, "Wow, I'm sorry that happened to you." And I said, "Well, I'm not, because it's made me who I am." And that was a true God encounter when that happened. That's a whole nother, that's almost a whole nother show here. But there was a connection.
Why don't you go into that just a little bit?
Okay. Well, when I was a teenager, there was a guy, he used to work for a sheriff's department down south, and he had been let go the night before. This is back in the 70s. Because they had caught him in the morgue having sex with bodies. He was a necrophiliac.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And so back then...
They call that necrophilia, right?
Necrophilia, yeah. So apparently he was a homicidal necrophiliac, because when they took away his source, he decided he was going to create another one, and he had stolen a car from their compound and pulled me over that night. I was 16, fairly new driver. Matter of fact, my car still had a paper plate on it. I just picked it up. And... he arrested me under, you know, nonsense, saying that my registration and my plate didn't match and all that. I knew it was bogus from the start. And so he handcuffed me, and I was coming back from a track meet, so I was dressed in my running gear, which meant I was barefoot, a tank top, and those old Bill Roger running shorts that you couldn't hide your religion in, much less anything else. So as soon as he started patting me down, I knew something was up. So he handcuffs me and puts me in the back of the car and tells me that we're going to go down and be processed. And I'm like, okay. And as we get going, he says, "Well, I'll try and clean this up for the audience. If I offered to do certain services for him, he would not arrest me." And I said, "That's okay, just arrest me." And then he switched it up and says, "Well, if he did certain services for me, that I wouldn't be arrested." I said, "That's okay, just arrest me." And ends up, he drives me out to the Everglades and beat me with his nightstick for hours on end and just... pretty much, it wasn't much of my body. I was bleeding from the head. My back was like a busted tomato.
My gosh.
Yeah, it was something. But I will tell you where God was in that.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is A New Day.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Rhett Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
Jesus loves me, this I know.
Start Smart Learning Center offers a fun, nurturing, faith-based space for your child to grow and succeed. We are now enrolling children ages 1 to 5 years old. Visit our website at startsmartlc.org or call us at 772-281-4121 to give your child the head start they deserve.
Yes, Jesus loves me.
I was blind, now I'm seeing in color. I was dead, now